At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified expert technicians nationally. So if you're looking for car service that's got your back on the road, choose the place that treats every car like their own and every customer like family. Don't wait any longer. Call your local Firestone Complete Auto Care and book your next appointment today.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Those of us who knew him best talk about him often. I swear the stuff he pulled.
These friends of mine could use a couple of beers.
And he got it.
Sometimes it makes me sad, though. Andy being gone. I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged. Their feathers are just too bright. And when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. But still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty that they're gone. I guess I just miss my friend.
Well, that's a clip from the movie Shawshank Redemption, which when it came out first was a box office flop, but is now acknowledged to be a classic. And that's our theme on Inside Hollywood this week. I'm joined by broadcaster and producer Lisa Cannon. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning.
So, a movie we all love was a flop.
Yes, I just thought this was a really good segment to do today because film flops, people think, how do they become classics? How do they become cult classics? And sometimes, you know, it might have been the VHSs back in the 90s that kind of reignited their rebirth as it was. But Shawshank Redemption really was a financial disaster, actually, when it came out. And it is actually considered one of the best films of all time. But back in 1994, it struggled to compete with Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump on the release. I mean, there were huge, huge mega hits that came out. And it had limited female appeal because obviously it was an in-yard prison yarn. And Tim Robbins, who stars as Andy Dufresne, whom we know, that wonderful Morgan Freeman lilt, talks about him there. He shouldn't have been caged. His colours were too bright. And many people said, what's that shink-shank reduction thing that people used to say to Tim Robbins? And, you know, it's a remarkable turnaround where movies that are flops, this, you know, the budget was $19.3 million, but it grossed $22 million. Doesn't sound like a lot, but grew more and more as it buoyed up by the seven Oscars.
The Academy, that's the point. The Academy nominated and therefore they understood how good a movie it was.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as I mentioned, the whopping kind of VHS push at the time, it was the most rented title of 1995. It's one of my favourite films. I mean, I find it hard to watch. I wouldn't really be watching it now in this current point of my life, but I feel like it's just one of those movies you have to revisit now and now from time to time
now
to get
hear
the essence of it.
Another movie which surprised me was a flop when it came out.
Lick an orange, it tastes like an orange. Lick a pineapple, it tastes like a pineapple. Go ahead, try it. Try some more. The strawberries taste like strawberries. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Snozzberries? Who ever heard of a snozzberry?
We are the music makers. And we are the dreamers of dreams.
It's a movie I love. Willy Wonka.
Who doesn't love Willy Wonka? Back in 1971, Roald Dahl poo-pooed it. He was like, this is ridiculous. It's sappy. It's not for me. It's the musical approach. I'm not having it. So he disowned it. But the star power of Gene Wilder really wasn't enough, actually, to get the bums on seat for the Americanized Roald Dahl version. So it didn't help matters that Roald Dahl didn't like it. He disowned it. But also, I think just the performance of Gene Wilder, some people were a bit, they found it a bit jarring. I love it, of course. And now it's a cult classic. But it was hastily written at the end. You know, that scene where, of course, he's given the chocolate factory and away they go and catapult into the air and crash to the ceiling. That was all written because they'd no money left. So they CGI'd as best they could, although it's very badly CGI'd at the end. But it really wasn't an immediate hit.
How did it come into public affection?
Well, the marketing losses were a huge factor because nobody went to see it actually at the time. And it didn't warrant a sequel, although we all know the Roald Dahl books with the glass elevator were all there as the kind of the book sequels. But it was shown on TV so many times, especially around Christmas. Everybody knows it's a Christmas classic, but that's how it reignited an audience. And actually, if you don't mind me saying, I believe it was a lot of people were, at home, people getting stoned, having a laugh, thinking this is a bit of, you know, what is this trippy film? Mm. It kind of garnered a real cult following. And then all of a sudden, Willy Wonka became Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
And of course, there's now a Willy Wonka industry.
A Willy Wonka industry. And, you know, Timothy Chalamet, you know, it was all done by Tim Burton. I mean, people were very angry. The real Willy Wonka fides, you know, the ones that were the ologists of the actual kind of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory hated the fact that there was a new version. So there
now,
you go.
We're going to hear a clip from Blade Runner.
I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain.
Now, that is a classic movie. So many people love it. And it was very innovative, very daring at the time.
It was very daring at the time. And it's not the biggest flop of all the ones I've kind of mentioned. I mean, there's all loads of other ones. Donnie Darko and It's a Wonderful Life. But this still was a galling disappointment for Ridley Scott and Warner Brothers. Not given the sensational design of it, but also the thing, which I'd love to talk about briefly if we can, that tanked. And this came a distant second to E.T. as well, because it was kind of word of mouth that allowed Blade Runner become what it's become. Its budget was 21.6 million, which seems a lot, but actually it grossed 41.8 million eventually.
So it did wash its face eventually.
It did wash its face, but actually, Scott was allowed to revisit for 1992 and he revisited and cut it and recut it seven times. And then finally, the version that we all know and love is the one that came out. And that monologue that I just played there, that's how the reputation of the movie soared.
Talk to me about Citizen Kane, which actually lost money.
Yes. Now, lots of people say to me, Citizen Kane, why would that have been a flop at the time? But it really was, actually. 1941 classic. The budget was in at £646,000 and the recorded loss was £123,000. That's huge money in 1941. Mm. Huge. I mean, you're talking 80 years ago. But Hollywood wasn't ready for Orson Welles, and RKO was pillared with the industry for kind of granting this upstart director, you know, total control of the final cut. So I've spoken about this before in the segment in Inside Hollywood, how Orson Welles was an absolute, he was complete genius when it came to making film, but he had to have the final cut and he threatened lawsuits to get it released, etc. And
but he had a problem with the Hearst organisation.
That's
William Randolph Hearst was being satirised as Citizen Kane.
That's it. And of course, well, they didn't like that, you know, and the etiquette of the film was that he shouldn't even have been mentioned. But the gossip columnists of the time urged a boycott on the film as well. So everything was rallying against him and it was booed in all the Oscar categories and kind of shunned. But it did win for script, I suppose. But French critics in the 1950s are actually to be thanked because they're the ones that declared it a masterpiece. And so it became.
And of course, there was the whole question of Rosebud.
We
won't go into that on daytime radio.
We won't.
I want to move on to Vertigo, and you have a clip of somebody talking about Vertigo.
Yeah, so obviously the wonderful Martin Scorsese, is one of his favourite films, including Citizen Kane. And this is director Martin Scorsese talking about how the Vertigo, how interesting it is and why it is such a cult classic. 1958, here we go.
Vertigo then. I said, well, you see, Vertigo's interesting. I said, because in a way, when I first saw it, my friends, we again came in the middle, didn't matter, you know, watched the whole film. We thought it was good. We didn't know why. We didn't say, gee, this is better than Man Who Knew Too Much. We didn't put it in that category. It was just another Hitchcock film. But there was something special about it. And over the years, we kept watching it again and again. And I think it has to do with the character. I think it has to do with the obsession of the character. And it's something that you don't, it doesn't matter. The story doesn't matter at all. You'll watch that film repeatedly and repeatedly because of the way he takes you through his obsession and the kind of man he is in that film. Therefore, it's a picture, I think, that of Hitchcock's that is one of his greatest, if not his best, because you can keep watching it and watching it. It's always new because you go through that journey with him in his own soul.
It's interesting. He says, we knew it was good, but we didn't know why.
Exactly. And Scorsese talks about like The Searchers. He talks about Citizen Kane. And of course, he's a huge fan of Hitchcock, which maybe people don't know. And he was only 13 when he watched this movie. And I always find with Inside Hollywood, people message me on Instagram after and they're like, oh, I love the fact that you go back and revisit our older films. I mean, this is a 1958 version. Hitchcock was really disappointed that this didn't perform well. And he actually became a recluse afterwards because it got hammered by the critics at the time. And it just about broke even. So the budget was 1.9 and it only grossed 2.5. And he always set out to make, you know, big budget movies like North by Northwest, which, you know, ranked in about 7.6 million. So this was a huge loss. And what's interesting, when you look back at old interviews with Kim Novak and, of course, Jimmy Stewart, maybe the casting wasn't perfect. Jimmy Stewart looked a little bit older. You know, maybe he didn't have, you know, what we thought was the kind of obsessive qualities that was needed for Kim Novak's character for them to blend correctly. But the critical response stung so deeply for Hitchcock that he did retreat. And it was only when it was kind of reignited back in the 1980s, it became adored and it cracked the top 10 in Sight and Sound critics poll. And it kind of dislodged Citizen Kane from the top spot. So it's number one for me as the flop of the late 1950s that became a cult classic of its time.
Well, finally, we have a clip from a movie which is my favourite watch every Christmas.
Give me back my slippers. I'm the only one that knows how to use them. They're no use to you. Give them back to me. Give them back.
Keep tight inside of them. Their magic must be very powerful, or she wouldn't want them so badly.
You stay out of this, Glinda, or I'll fix you as well.
Oh, rubbish. You have no power here. Be gone before somebody drops a house on you too.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like. But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog too.
Now, I can't believe that wasn't a smash when it came out, because that wonderful beginning where it's in Kansas in black and white and then we hit the world of Oz and it goes into Technicolor.
Absolutely. All the executives wanted to cut the Kansas scene because it was too long. They thought it was just too kind of foreboding and grim. But of course, you have the beautiful, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow song. Imagine if that had been cut. Imagine where we would be. So the budget was 2.1 million and then it initially grossed 2.3. But MGM just couldn't see the profit in it. I think, you know, specifically, you know, it was reissued back again in 1949, another 10 years later. It won Best Original Song in the Oscar. That kind of helped Judy Garland's then following and cult following as well. You know, it kind of became then repeatedly with the broadcasts around the 1950s, then Dorothy garnered all of her more millions and millions of followers. But it was never set to be the classic that it is now. So, you know, sometimes, you know, performing terribly at the box office can also be a first step in a movie's journey to being a cult status symbol. So there you go.
A cult classic, but no good to the original producers who paid for it.
Exactly. And of course, it made, well, I suppose Judy Garland a household name, even though she was before. But really and truly, The Wizard of Oz is such a beautiful movie. I'm so glad people, you know, look at these movies and think, okay, it was a flop, like The Thing. You know, I'd urge people to go, well, it's very, very good. You can get that out, of course, on Netflix and other. But even movies like Clue, if you know, from 1985 with Tim Curry, that hit really high in the box office at 14.6 million, you know, became a cult classic because it was three different endings. And other movies as well, like we mentioned, Vertigo, Citizen Kane, Strange Days. There's lots of other notable mentions as well.
All right, so just because it's a flop initially doesn't mean that it won't live on in history. Lisa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Broadcaster and producer.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified technicians nationally. So don't wait any longer. Give us a call and book your next appointment today.